This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. With sports around the world put to a halt, many athletes are making a conscious effort to stay fit and remain in competitive shape. With the prospect of live sports and leagues stuttering to start again in the near future, the use of online tools such as Zoom and Skype is crucial in staying in touch with coaches and training personnel. As the world is slowly but surely opening up its doors again amidst this pandemic, football clubs in particular are resuming full training sessions, however still a long way from normality with only a handful of players instead of the whole squad. Being cautiously optimistic about sports resuming play, today on the show we check in with one of the biggest stars of the Malaysian League, Selangor midfield ace Brandon Gunn, a man who has a storied career playing professionally in Malaysia and Australia. We kickstarted this conversation by asking him how he's been coping during this MCO period. Here's Ali Johan with the story.
For me, it's actually been quite a nice time. I recently have a new baby, and it's allowed me, I guess, to spend more time with him and be able to see the little things that he's learning and be a part of that process a little bit more. Before, you know, we were doing double sessions or we were away on away trips or whatnot. So yeah, it's good to be able to spend a little bit more time with my family, but. I think everyone goes a little bit stir crazy and have a little bit of cabin fever by this time anyway. It's been quite a long time in lockdown.
Yeah, I remember that your child was born like before or right after the game or something. You had to leave the team.
Yeah, yeah.
How old is he now?
He's now five and a bit months.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, he was born about. It was 3 days before, 4 days before the Thailand game.
Yeah. So I've been seeing a lot of athletes and sportsmen online posting, you know, videos of them training at home. Do you have any sort of this kind of regimes at home?
Yeah, I think it's very important for, I guess, a sports person. You know, we are training every day. We have a set routine basically as to how our day will unfold, where our rest periods will be, where our training will be, and it's very structured. So to have this lockdown and be in this MCO and have no real routine and structure, I think that's why you are seeing a lot of people posting videos and whatnot, because it keeps them sane in terms of having that routine. And as I said, it's very important to have that routine as an athlete, because if you get out of that routine, then things can start to happen mentally. Then you miss a workout, and then physically you are down. You know, so it's quite a hard period for an athlete, as we are, you know, always outdoors, active. You know, even in my apartment building, our gym has been closed down, our pool's been closed down, everything's been closed down. So you have to rely on this routine and your workouts to be able to keep momentum and keep mentally healthy.
Right. So do you have a personal regime, or do you follow a team's regime for yourself?
We have a structured team program set by our fitness trainer and also our physio. So we have to log in every day as to what we are doing and what exercises and programs and be able to show them our intensity that we're working at. So yeah, we do have that side of things, but at the same time, you know, we are allowed to personalize our fitness routines and also what time of the day we can do it, so as to, you know, help out with people with family at home, and it's not so structured in terms of having to be online on Zoom or whatnot, as I see some other teams are doing. So yeah, it allows us to choose what we want to do in terms of exercises, but at the same time we have to follow the principles set down by our fitness trainers.
Right, and you know, you're a professional, and I'm obviously not. So I couldn't tell if I hadn't been working out or if I hadn't been active in a long time. I can't tell my fitness level has come down or anything. Do you see like, you know, direct impacts or like clear cut changes since having been locked in the lockdown?
Yeah, well, that's actually funny. You know, I probably could set you a little task to see how fit you are. But for myself, I definitely can see the physical aspect of myself changing, and it's hard to, I guess, do cardio type of exercises. But there are ways around those type of things, and I think that's just being in the sport so long and having a bit of experience with a lot of different fitness coaches and abilities to put exercises together to try to maintain somewhat of a physical element to be ready to go back to football. But yeah, it is very, very difficult to gauge your fitness when you're at home and you don't have like a treadmill or, you know, a bike or anything like that to be able to do cardio. So yeah, I do feel my cardio is probably taking a big hit because that is my game. You know, I love to run around, I love to put pressure on people, and I like to be very, very fit. So it does hurt a little bit, but at the same time, as I said, I've got a little bit of experience in the exercises that I can do, and you know, you can always group exercises together to keep that heart rate up, to keep your cardiovascular system working. So, yeah, there are ways around it, but you're never going to get the same level of fitness as you are if you were training on the field or playing games.
Right, and I think that it'll take some time to get used to being outside again once this is all over.
In saying that, you know, at the end of every season, you know, we'll have a minimum of, say, 4 weeks off.
Right.
I know this has been a little bit longer than that, but in those 4 weeks, I probably wouldn't be doing as much exercise as I am currently at the moment. So I think to myself that I'm already ahead of that sort of off-season type of feeling. So in saying that, you know, I think it won't be too bad when we get back onto the pitch.
Right.
If we do get it back onto the pitch this year, I think MFL, FAM, they will try to help us out with maybe a 2 week minimum training that we can get in before any games are played. So in those 2 weeks, if we do get that, you know, I think we'll be able to get back to somewhat 80% of our fitness, mm-hmm. and then the rest of the 20% will come when we play those games.
Yes, yes. Okay. Let's take it back to Brendan Gunn year zero. You know, I read that your dad, who's a football fan, he's the one who registered you into a football club when you were a kid, Marto Hammers FC.
Yeah, that's right. Martin Hammers.
Martin Hammers.
I was only a little fella back then. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do because in Australia, when you grow up, you play a lot of different sports. And at the time, you know, I was playing tennis, I was swimming, I was doing like athletics, running, and playing badminton. I was doing all different types of things. So to be able to be pushed into football was, you know, amazing for myself, obviously, right now. But I didn't know what I was getting into, and my dad had a real love for football. And, you know, obviously English Premier League, as I feel like all Malaysians are invested in the English Premier League. And
yeah.
He was also, when he went to Australia, he also played football and thought that, you know, I would get a good kick out of it, making friends also in football. And, so he pushed me into that when I was about five.
Wow.
Five, six years old. And, then I grew up from there loving the sport.
What can you say about team spirit at 5 years old?
Yeah, I guess it's not really about team spirit. I think it's more along the lines of at 5 years old of making friends and competing in a sport where you don't know that you're competing. You know, at that age, you know, we were just running around a field, kicking a ball and trying to kick it into the goal. So, you know, when I always remember when you do score a goal and then your whole team celebrates like they've won the World Cup, you know, that was the best time, you know, when you were when you were young. So, yeah, it was all about those experiences of, you know, making friends and having that camaraderie and, you know, relying on other people as well. You know, individual sport, you don't have anyone to rely on. So
yeah.
That's always something good to have, that camaraderie aspect of football.
Right. Okay, great. And then you played for years in Australia in the A-League, Sydney FC. What can you say about Australian football when you were playing there?
Yeah, well, Australian football has always been a difficult topic for me because, as I said, in Australia, there's a lot of different sports. You look at rugby league, rugby union, Australian football, Aussie rules. So there's a lot of competing sports, whereas I find in Malaysia there's not so many competing sports. So in Australia, when you're trying to compete against these really, really big organisations, it's always difficult. But for me personally, it was always about the love of football. I just loved it so much that, you know, I always wanted to pursue it. I always wanted to be the best I could possibly be. And that took me towards the likes of Sydney FC. And I loved my time spending there. We did well when I was there, you know, won a championship. And really showed me what football means to me. I think that was the big that was the big moment for me when we won the championship, and how elated I was when we won it. And you know, I think that it only made me love the game even more.
Yeah. What position did you play in?
It's a bit of a funny one. I played all across the midfield. It was dependent on the coaches. I had a few coaches in my time there, and we had one European coach that played a different style of football, played a diamond midfield. So there's not really a centre midfield in a diamond midfield. You know, you've got attacking midfielder, you've got a right, a inside right midfielder, inside left midfielder, and a defensive midfielder. So when I played under him, I played on the right side, right, which is not like a traditional winger. You were tucked inside and made to do the same role as a centre midfielder, but you've also got a harder role of getting forward and getting back to help with both sides. So I think that's where I grew the love for working hard and getting forward to help in the attack and getting back to help in defence as well. So, many, many different positions when I was in Australia: attacking mid, defensive mid, centre mid, right mid. I played all over the place in the midfield, and I enjoyed really every position because I was able to learn those positions. And now when I bring my experience to the new teams, I can see where players need to be. I can see where I should have been in those positions. So we can always help other players that may be struggling or may not be in the right position, or, you know, we can always be of hand to help people.
Right. And, you know, as the saying goes, the battle is always won in the middle of the park.
Yeah. Well, you would say that, wouldn't you? But but when at the end of the day, you know, you look at the Ballon d'Ors and they're all strikers that win.
Oh, you're right.
You know, so is it really is it really the battles won in the middle?
Well, Messi always picks up the ball from the middle of the field, if that means anything.
That's true. But Messi is one of the players that can pick up the ball, beat 11 players, and then score a goal. So I think he's the one outside the realm of all footballers. But I understand what they mean by it's one in the midfield. It's a bit of a grafting, a bit of a tough work hard sort of aspect to it, and it's always the one that has to be the fittest in the team. So there's a lot. I think it's down to, people say that it's one in the midfield because there's a lot of hard work. You've got to do both. You've got to defend, you've got to attack. So I think that's why a lot of people would say that.
Selangor of midfield ace Brendan Gunn speaking to Ali Johan right here on Bar None. Stick around, more of that conversation coming right up here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, my name is Daryl Ong, and you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Today on the program, we have on the line Selangor of midfielder Brendan Gunn, who has been speaking to Ali Johan about all things football. A man who's only recently made his debut donning the national colours and has made an instant impact under national team coach Tan Cheng Ho's guidance. However, uprooting yourself and playing your trade in another country comes with the added challenge of adapting to a new footballing culture and mentality. We continue that conversation by asking him about the first time he set foot on Malaysian soil, coming from Australia when he signed for Sabah in 2012.
So back then, it was in 2012. That was the year that foreigners were allowed back into the league.
Yep.
And I think that the league at the time was, starting new, and a new beginning had come in, and managements were still finding their feet, and the facilities weren't probably as good as what they are today. So it was a massive shock to me, because in Australia, our facilities were fantastic. They were, top level facilities, and you had sports scientists, you had people, you basically turned up to training and everything was taken care of for you. Whereas when I came to Sabah, a lot of those things weren't in place. Training fields, facilities, sports science, whatnot, that really wasn't the forefront of football when I first joined here. Mm. I recently went to Sabah. I've played against them a fair few times, actually, in the time that I've been here. But the most recent time I went there, now you can see the improvement they've made. They've made training facilities. They've got gyms. They've got all the necessary facilities that you need. They've got a home base. I went and saw their home offices now. All their facilities are fantastic. So you can see in those years of what I would say a reset for the league, mm-hmm. Up until now, how far teams like Sabah have come, and the facilities that are available to players these days. So yeah, so as I said, it was a big shock to me, and I think I did a lot of learning, a lot of self growth was had for myself in that particular year, because I had to I wasn't babied anymore. Mm-hmm. I wasn't fed on a silver spoon. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of Australians probably are, I was able to grow. And I think that was probably the best aspect of being a part of Sabah for myself. The personal growth was huge, I felt, and allowed me to see football in a new light.
Yeah, it's like you said, the reset, a redevelopment of the entire league. And I mean, of course, mm-hmm. The game redeveloped, but also the entire ecosystem, as you mentioned. Football culture, though, did you find anything similar between two countries, Malaysia and Australia, in terms of football culture?
So if you want to find similarities, people love sport in Australia.
Right.
People love sport here in Malaysia. But that's probably the only similarity I have, because of the fact that when I came to Malaysia, the passion that is instilled in the culture for football is just another level. It's amazing. I've never seen anything like it before. The love of the purity of the game is what I love about Malaysia. Every fan that you speak to, well, most people I speak to, really, they love football, whether it's EPL, whether it's Malaysian football, whether it's Spanish football, it doesn't matter. They just love the game. And if you go back to the question of similarities, I think in Australia, it's more down to the fact that, if a team plays on a Sunday, then you take your family out to watch a game. It's more entertainment. Go out there, have a nice Sunday afternoon, Sunday night out, watch a bit of sport, and then we go home. There's no real passion for the game. Obviously, there are pockets of passion that supporter bases. Obviously, there are always those fanatics. But the size of it, I don't think can compare to Malaysia. Even when we play FA Cup finals, Malaysia Cup finals, you go national team games, the crowd you get is absolutely insane. I've never seen anything like it. Never played in front of that many people before, you know. You go to Bukit Jalil, you play in front of 90,000 people because of the passion that they Malaysians have for football. So I don't think you can really compare the two, but I think Malaysian culture and the love for football they have is just is outstanding. It's world class.
You mentioned the Malaysia Cup final, and that took my mind to the 2018 Malaysia Cup final. You played in that game. You were named the best player playing for Perak at the time. Such a nail biting affair versus Terengganu, that one. Won on penalties, and you scored in that game too. Cup finals are a special one, but many people, at least Malaysian football fans, consider that game to be one really epic game. What can you say about that?
Yeah, well, I personally would say it was one epic game, but when you break it all down, you know, there was, you know, 15 people that could have won best player on that day. You know, there was so many good players out there, and I think that's what cup finals bring out of you. You know, we went down 2-0. To goals that we probably, you know, on another day wouldn't have happened that way. So we felt a little bit, I guess, cheated. I probably wouldn't say cheated, but yeah, that's what comes to my mind, because I felt cheated. I was like, oh, how did those goals go in? You know, like the ball bouncing up like that, you know, on Shah Alam's surface. Like how many times does that happen in a game? You know, we went into the change room at halftime, and you know, we knew that we were still in the game because of the fact that they hadn't created really amazing chances. You know, they had a few half chances here and there, but we thought to ourselves, the only way that they scored was from our own mistakes or the ground, you know, the ground surfaces or whatever it was. So for us, we were still in the game. We were confident. I don't think anyone had their head down in the change room. Coach Mehmet is always good at getting people with a positive outlook and a never die attitude. So, yeah, we obviously had to come back from there. It was a difficult task, but yeah, as you say, those cup finals are special. When we walked out before the game, it was nail biting already. You know, we had goosebumps on our skin from so many fans there yelling. It was, you know, 3 hours before the game was even going to start. So yeah, they are special. To be, as I said, many people could have won that best player on the day. It was just, you know, lucky that it was myself. But I think that the team really showed what Malaysia is all about. And as I said about those national team games, Malaysian players, it's always a never die attitude. You play until the final whistle. You give 100%, and you never say that you're going to give up. And that's really what I love about this place.
Yeah, that's right. And Brendan, you've done great things with the national team as well. Scored and assisted a goal in the World Cup Asian qualifier as well. That chip, man, to Sumare. Wow, everybody. Everybody was caught surprised, but also like, what a ball. What went through your mind when you played that pass?
To be honest, I had seen Samare there. I didn't know the ball was actually going to come to me. I watched the replay over and over, and you can see myself, I kind of stopped. I was making a run forward for a cross at first, and then I kind of stopped, and Safawi had the ball, and I wasn't sure what he was going to do, because you never know what he's going to do. He's such an electrifying player that you think that he's just going to take a touch, move it out, and shoot. So I'm waiting for a shot, and then all of a sudden he passes it to me. So I was a little bit surprised there, but I'd always seen Samara there. I didn't know what I was going to do, and I think that's the instinct in footballers and athletes. You know, you always have an instinct, and sometimes you close your eyes and you just let your body take over. So that was one of those moments that, you know, you just pull out of a hat. But, yeah, as I said, it was fantastic to be able to be a part of that team, because that team, you know, is really, really amazing. There's a lot of talent in that team, and to be able to step on that field with all those players and do something constructive for the nation, I think, you know, is the best part about being a part of this national team.
Yeah, and I mean, the finish was great, but I mean, the entire back line was caught off guard. That's the best thing about pulling off a pass.
Well,
like
it was actually funny, because it was Corbin Ong. When we celebrated straight away, Corbin ran over to me and said, what was that? How did you do that? What were you doing? What were you even thinking? So, you know, even the players were surprised with what happened. So, it was pretty funny. But at the end of the day, you know, we were so excited to get that win, and it meant a lot to us. And also meant a lot. I feel like it meant a lot to everyone in that stadium and everyone watching on TV at home. You know, it really, really did mean a lot, that game.
I could hear Des Coghill saying the stadium erupted, you know, in his voice.
Yeah, of course. Like, we couldn't hear anything, to be honest with you. It was so loud out there. And it's very difficult, actually, to play in a stadium like that, because it is so loud that when you were trying to communicate with players or saying man on to someone or turn to someone or, you know, anything along those lines, you know, you have to say it 3 or 4 times before the person can hear you. So, yeah, it's an amazing feeling to be a part of that. And it just goes to show, as I said, it goes back to that passion that Malaysia has for football. And it's unrelentless, and it's something that I love.
That's great. Okay, so now, Brendan, you're with Selangor FC for the 2020 season and about to kick off, but we are now, you know, derailed somewhat by the unprecedented COVID-19 outbreak. What's the spirit of the team like currently?
Yeah, well, so we've had a few games and, you know, we were up and down, up and down. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing too bad. We obviously finished going into this MCO not on a great note, but I think the main issue here is, you know, I think we all agree is that health comes before football, and it always has to. You know, a lot of people rely on football. I understand a lot of people rely on football for their escape, you know, that 90 minutes of not worrying about their problems, and it gives them a chance to just, you know, sit there and watch and be able to enjoy something that they love. I 100% understand that. But at the end of the day, safety obviously comes first. Health comes first of everyone, of every human life. So I think that we have to take a step back, you know, as I guess sad and disappointed about the league being finished, that has to take a back seat. Mm-hmm. And we have to I guess open our eyes to what's happening in the world. You know, this is something that, you know, we've never seen before in our lifetime, and it has to be taken very, very seriously. So I think as a team, you know, we understand that this is a very serious issue within the world, and then also within Malaysia. So we do miss the game. We are sad that we aren't on the pitch doing what we love and trying to win for people that also love Selangor as well. Mm. But yeah, as I said, it's something that we have to look past at this time and consider everyone's health and safety. And I think that the boys will be itching to get back out there. But at the same time, you know, we are happy that we can be a part of something with our social media and with our presence within the public, to be able to ask people to stay at home, stay safe, stay healthy. It's not about football, it's about people's health at this particular time, and I think that's an important message that Selangor as a club is giving to the public.
Right. And looking at pre-lockdown, pre-MCO, I think around the world, football leagues were already mulling about what to do when they eventually have to stop the leagues. But there were also talks about playing the games without spectators. What can you say about that? Have you ever played in a game behind closed doors without anybody in the stadium?
Well, our last game that we played before the MCO was without fans.
Right.
It was against Kedah. And it's a strange feeling for me. I don't think, and I think a lot of people, you would have heard many, many, many athletes say, you know, football is not football without fans. But at the same time, obviously I understand the game has to be played. If we do go back to playing, it has to be played with no fans. We have to look after the public's health first. But at the same time, you know, I look at it and I say, all right, football's not football without fans, but if we are allowed to play and if we are allowed to go back to a bit of normality without fans at the stadiums, then I think it can be a positive thing, because people still can tune in online, people still can be a part of that 90 minutes. Okay, you're not going to be there at the stadium and cheering, and we're not going to have the same, I guess, those extra little bits of motivation that we need sometimes, you know, when you go down a goal and then your fans cheer for you to get back in there and fight harder. You know, you're not going to have that. Mm. But at the same time, at least we are able to give a product to the public, who the people who really do miss football, or the people who, you know, are in, you know, a bad situation that use football to have a bit of release, as I said before, you know, and just not think about their worries and problems for 90 minutes. And I hope that can be the positive message at the end of the day, is that we can be a part of that positivity rather than be a part of a negative sort of outlook of saying football's not football without fans. So, yeah, I try to look at everything with a positive outlook. Mm-hmm. And I can see that if we do go back to play and it is online, then at least people have something to watch, have something to do, have something to still cheer for, you know. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, as it is right now, the internet has opened up all its gates for streaming everything, right, from concerts to movies, mm-hmm. and matches should be the same too. But I mean, I do agree with you, it's great. But I have to say, I have seen matches played behind closed doors on TV, and it didn't feel the same way.
Oh, 100%. And that's exactly the way we feel on the field. Mm. The way that you just put it then, it feels strange. It doesn't feel the same. It's exactly the same for us. You know, because it's almost like going out there and having a training game. So we turn up to training and coach says, all right, we're doing a tactical 11v11 today. Mm. So we go out there, we've got no fans, and we just play football. That's exactly how these matches feel to us. Obviously, there's a competitive side to it, you know, it's state versus state or club versus club, however it is. Mm. But at the same time, the feeling of the game is very much similar to a training game. And sometimes that may seep into players' minds as to maybe they're not as motivated, or maybe, you know, it just feels more like training, so it doesn't matter as much. Whereas it really does matter, because there's points on the board. There's, you know, so it can create a mental gap, and I think that's where teams with a mental edge can benefit from this.
That's great. Well, Brendan, we're down to our last few questions. I just want to know from you, once we have football resume in, you know, in Malaysia and of course in all of the world, what's your goal, your personal goal for 2020 playing for Selangor?
I came to Selangor because they're the biggest club in Malaysia. Mm. In terms of, they've got the most history here. They've got some absolutely amazing players who have played here in the past. And we feel as a team that the management has given us a lot of new facilities. They've always been open and communicate with us. Whenever we need something, they're always there to provide for us. And the fans have been fantastic for us since I've arrived anyway. And they've shown me love. They've welcomed me to the club. And I've always said to them when I first came here, I'm here to win championships. I don't think I think it's a little bit cliche, because I think any player would go to any club and say the same thing about wanting to win championships. But I think with the team we have, we have a better chance at winning championships. So a personal goal for me is to, I guess that's a team goal, but a personal goal for me is to just continue to grow as a footballer and put 100% into every performance. Every time I step onto that field, every performance needs to be 100%. So for me, I just want to be able to give back to the management, to the players who have supported me, and also to the fans who have supported me throughout the years. I've had a lot of tough times in my career as well. It hasn't just been all roses and all positive times in my career. So to be able to have this time and play the last few years quite well is only motivation for me to get better and better as a player and give more back to my club and back to hopefully the national team.
Selangor midfield ace Brendan Gunn speaking to Ali Johan. If you'd like to revisit that interview, do head over to our website shortly, www.bfm.my/Barnan for the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us at BFM Radio. And also don't forget to download our latest app for free via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong. You have been tuning in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Join us again next week on here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.